Welcome to the Ohio Star Podcast. I am your host, Neil W. McCabe. I am the national political editor of the Star News Network, a constellation of 11 state-focused news sites, including the Ohio Star. This week, you will hear from Star reporter Peter DeBrasca about what stories he's working on. And former Congressman Jim Renacci will talk to me about the letter Secretary of State Frank LaRose's office sent to his rival in the GOP primary for governor, Joe Blystone. Both men are trying to unseat Republican Governor Mike DeWine. Also, you will hear my conversation with Mike Collins, a Republican running for Georgia 10. That is the House seat vacated by Jody Heiss, who is now running for Georgia Secretary of State. But now, let's hear from Peter DeBrasca.
Peter, how are you, sir? Welcome back to the Ohio Star Podcast.
Neil, I'm doing great. It's great to be here. I hope you're doing well also.
I'm doing phenomenal and getting better every day. I was on a Coast Guard ship for 3 years, and there was a guy who worked in ship's office with me, the great Mike Lewis, and he used to say, if I felt any better, I'd be playing in the NBA, which is... I think that's like the best.
That is funny.
So, I mean, I steal from everyone, but I never really stole that one because I just felt like it was just so Mike Lewis. I felt bad copying it, but I copied from everyone else. So,
gotcha.
So what are you covering in Ohio right now for the Ohio Star and the Star News Network?
There's a lot of great stuff going on in Ohio, very busy state, of course. But specifically, I'm covering a story out of Columbus today. The city of Columbus, in cooperation with Franklin County, has decided that opioid addicts are eligible for free Narcan. For those who don't know, Narcan is a nasal spray that you use if you overdose on opioids. In order to essentially revive you. And it seems to me that the goal of public health should be to avoid overdoses in the first place, which of course, you know, there's a lot of reasons why, there's a lot of preceding reasons why people would be addicted to drugs and then subsequently overdose. But very interesting. So you're allowed now in Columbus to just call the city and say, hey, I'm doing this illegal thing and I'm addicted to it. And can you give me free drugs in case I do too many of the illegal drugs, which I just find the whole thing to be kind of absurd, but also fascinating.
Yeah, I think that we can start using Narcan instead of Reboot. Like, it's time we Narcan this economy. Or, you know, a guy runs for office, he says, I'm going to Narcan this conservative agenda. I first heard of Narcan, this is probably the same time you first heard of it, is when Prince had to be revived while he was flying on his private jet and it made an emergency landing. And then nobody really said what was going on. And then it turns out they Narcan'd him. And then everyone was worried, and then he went outside and rode a bicycle around the parking lot, and everybody's like, oh, okay, he's fine.
Just and a normal day in the life.
And then he was what we used to call a shovel-ready project soon after that.
I see. I did not hear about it first from that story. I'm not sure when I first heard of Narcan, but you know, it's one of those things, Neil, that we shouldn't have to talk about it, right? Like, we should have had this opioid crisis figured out by now. Fewer people should know what Narcan is, right? And we talked about, like, sort of, we touched on some of the reasons why this is happening, and I think that... you know, number one, that is a big one, obviously, is that our border is wide open. And so drugs just free flow across the border. Opioids, free flow, across the border. These are drugs that are not manufactured in the United States. Like heroin is not manufactured in the United States. It comes from somewhere else. And we could very easily stop the flow if we were serious about ending, you know, the opioid crisis. But of course, we're not, because dependent people are, you know, easy to capture as voters. They're easy to control. They're easier to govern, right? And you know, not only that, but if the opioids must come across the border, which apparently is the policy of the United States government, you know, we could at least provide better services than saying, hey, if you're about to overdose, here's a free drug you can have, right? There's a big debate about, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, when I was growing up, people still talked about moral hazard. And people still use that term on Wall Street, you know, where they basically say, we're actually not going to bail you out because you made mistakes and you have to experience what it means to have moral hazard. Because if we start bailing out every company, then the risk taking is all askew, because people start figuring out the government bailout into their business plans, right? Which is already what banks and real estate companies already figured out, that if something really goes wrong, the government will take care of it, and that's now part of their risk management profile. I see the same thing happening, and I think that's really what you're talking about, is that people are supposed to be afraid of overdosing on heroin.
Right.
And it's a vicious and terrible thing. But, you know, the great Nick Lowe said you had to be cruel to be kind, you know?
Right. We're putting a Band-Aid over a much larger problem here. And you know, I don't know what the solution is, right? There's a debate even among people on the right now that says, well, should we really be locking all these people up, or should we be providing mental health counseling instead? And, I don't know the answer to that question. I know that the drug war, this is a little bit of a libertarian coming out in me, I don't have much of that, but the drug war has not worked. Drugs are winning the war on drugs, obviously. That's why we're handing out free Narcan. And so, I mean, keep in mind, too, it's sort of an interesting side note on this. Narcan is a pharmaceutical drug, right? So there's an interest in continuing to produce that and sell it, keeping with the motif of, you know, the pandemic, right, where profit for pharmaceutical companies was key. So there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of components here that I think we need to consider. But it just seems at face value that we're doing something wrong.
So I guess we'll wrap this up with, it's a real shame that Columbus, Ohio is making itself a magnet community for junkies, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's what they've done. And that's, you know, I don't know how many chambers of commerce would put that on a brochure, and it just seems really sad. It's a sad story all around, but certainly offering more Narcan is not going to help people put their lives back together again, because these people they're like living ghosts. They shuffle around without any hope, without any future.
Right.
And it's like, and they were, you know, they were once bright-faced kids on soccer teams, and you know, and now they're lost, and I don't know what to do about it.
And so that's, right. And so actually, I think if we really think about it, the solution is to give them meaning and purpose, right, in life, in some capacity, right? So it's probably not even to lock them up or give them, you know, some kind of mental health, psychiatric, something or another, although that may be part of the solution. But it's to eventually get them to the point where they have meaning, to where they don't need drugs to numb whatever pain it is, or to get away from whatever it is that's bringing them down. You know, people need purpose. People need fulfillment. And ultimately, maybe that's the solution.
Yeah, of course it is. And, you know, we used to say get a job. But moving along, there is someone who's up for a job. There's probably one of the most important job interviews that is ever conducted anywhere in the world, is the confirmation hearing for a Supreme Court justice. And Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn had the temerity to ask, is it Khajanji Brown Jackson?
Actually, I'm not sure how you pronounce her name, but I think that's close. Okay. I really am not. Ketanji Brown Jackson, I think, is my
right. So, so Judge Jackson was asked by the Tennessee Republican senator, what is the definition of a woman? And the judge said, what? And what is that? And what does her answer portend?
The judge said, I can't define a woman because I am not a biologist, which is a fascinating response in so many ways. First of all, I'm not a veterinarian, but I know what a dog is, right? So I don't think that that's a very good excuse. But the major problem with a potential, and it looks like she's going to get confirmed, so with the future Supreme Court justice not being able to define what a woman is that thousands of cases and, you know, probably tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of laws specifically deal with men and women. And so this goes way deeper, Neil, than just like, you know, who uses which bathroom, right? If we can't even make the basic distinction between a man and a woman, you know, what's to stop, let's say, a man getting divorced from his wife and saying, well, actually, you're not a biologist, Judge. Like, you can't tell me that I'm a man, and therefore, I'm not going to pay child support. How about that, right? We're going down a very dangerous path here where we can't even define, you know, what basic sex is. And it's just it's the most bizarre thing in the world. There's a case just today in Kentucky. Do you remember the clerk of whichever county it was in Kentucky, Kim Davis? Remember that?
Right,
case?
Of course.
Where she denied marriage licenses to same sex couples. Well, that was reported. It was reported by left wing media that she's in some kind of other trouble for that today, for denying marriage licenses to same sex couples. And people were like, "Well, how do we know they're same sex couples? We're not biologists. You know, we need to get some biologists to weigh in on this. Maybe Kim Davis didn't do anything wrong after all. You know."
Well, you know, Confucius, I don't know the original saying, but it basically, if I could paraphrase Confucius, what he said was, first we must give things the correct name before we can discuss these things, or we'll never get it right. And the second point, I guess, is, you know, what I noticed, because they're renaming all these military bases, like, for instance, Fort Bragg, is named for the Confederate general. But, you know, I would argue there's probably no general in the Civil War who did more for the Union victory than that idiot Bragg and the way he ran, like, the Confederate forces. But, you know, so part of the left's cultural, I guess, dominance or imperialism, or their program of sort of cultural dominance, I guess, is the way to put it, is to, they're constantly changing names and renaming things. And they do it all the time. And it's like they're in charge of our vocabulary, and we dance to their music. But, you know, I lived through the sort of feminist revolution, and I saw what feminism did to families and marriages as a kid. Like, it was just so strange that, you know, mothers of my friends, you know, it's like, would just leave. They said, I just don't want to be, this is in the 70s. They're just like, I don't want to be here anymore. And they would just take off. And it was completely unheard of. Now, sort of the final fruits of this revolution is the destruction of gender. And so how do you have feminism if you don't have women?
We're coming full circle. It really is amazing. And of course, you know, this has been a hot topic of conversation with the whole Leah Thomas winning the women's swimming national championship in the 500 meter last week. You know, I've reached out to multiple women's groups, actually in Pennsylvania, Leah Thomas at the University of Pennsylvania, and I asked them, hey, what do you think about this? You know, is this good or bad for women? Is this feminist or not feminist? I'm just trying to keep up here. And not one of them answered me. They're all doing this tightrope walk, right, where they're just kind of staying quiet. So I don't think, you know, that's been decided yet by these liberal groups who get to dictate everything and dictate our terms. And on that point, on dictating the vocabulary, it's so important that we do not cede the vocabulary to them. So important that when they say, oh, you have to call me by these pronouns, we say, no, I don't. How about that? Right? Because I'm not going to use a plural pronoun to describe a singular noun. That's not going to happen. I'm not going to use they, them to describe a singular person. One, out of respect for the King's English, and two, because I'm just not willing to cede the linguistic grounds and say to them, you can get away with just changing the meaning of things. No, you can't. You're going to go by what we've always gone by, and you're going to like it. Otherwise, you can cry about it.
Yeah, my pronouns are I and me.
Right, yes. sir and king, right? Like,
exactly.
You know, it's just absurd. So the Ohio Star podcast this week seems to be about the absurdity of it all. That really, maybe we
Peter,
do this every week, but this week it seems crazy.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Ohio Star podcast is always about the absurdity of it all. And no one brings out the absurdity like you, sir. Star reporter Peter Dabraska for the Star News Network. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
The Ohio Star obtained a copy of the March 4th letter signed by Brian Katz, the man who leads the campaign finance enforcement for Secretary of State Frank LaRose. The letter, in effect, orders farmer Joe Blystone to return more than $100,000 in contributions. This is just one of the 27 possible violations that Katz cites and asks about in the letter, including some shady expenditures. Former Congressman Jim Renacci, along with Blystone, is challenging Governor Mike DeWine for the GOP nomination for governor. He talked to me about the letter to Blystone.
What is your reaction to the letter from the Secretary of State to the Friends of Blystone, questioning dozens of expenditures and contributions in his campaign filings?
Well, first, election integrity is important to everyone, but election integrity also includes election finance integrity. So in our system, in our country, we have to make sure we have adequate procedures to protect elections, but I also believe election finance is important too, because that's how people understand where the money comes from, how it's being spent. So I think what I've seen here now from the letter that I've seen from Secretary of State Frank LaRose to the Friends of Blystone is that the Blystone campaign has not properly executed election finance issues properly. And what I'm seeing is that he's got serious issues with collecting money that's unreported, collecting cash without names attached to it, payments without expenditures. These are the kind of things that, It's important to voters that election integrity include making sure anyone running for office that we know where they're getting their money, how they're getting their money, and at the same time, how they're spending their money. Otherwise, we have a system that can't be reviewed. And I'll give you an example. If you don't know how much money is coming in into a campaign or where it's coming from, it could be coming from anywhere. And that's why these procedures are very important. Now, most people, when they get into politics, and I think what you'll hear from Mr. Blystone is, well, he's just a farmer and he didn't understand this. But let's face it, whether you're a farmer, whether you're a fireman, whether you're a police officer, whatever, there are rules that you have to follow. And if you're going to get involved in anything, you need to know the rules and you need to follow the rules. And clearly, based on what I've seen from the Secretary of State's review, he has mismanaged this very, very badly, and it's one of the reasons why there are so many specific issues being asked of his campaign. I think elections are important. I think Mr. Bison got into this race for all the right reasons. Many of his followers want to see Governor DeWine not be reelected. Jim Renacci does not want to see Governor DeWine be reelected, and my supporters do not want to see Governor DeWine be reelected. But at the same time, you know, every campaign and every candidate has to follow rules, and if they're not followed, those are the issues that come up. Clearly, Blystone got into this race potentially for the right reasons, but was ill-prepared and has violated so many campaign reporting violations that it shows that if you can't do the simple things, I mean, that's my biggest concern. If you can't do the simple things, like file a campaign finance report, how do you run and oversee an $80 billion government, one of the six largest economies in the United States? So, again, I applaud anybody for jumping in, but at the same time, you have to know the rules. And clearly, he did not. He was ill-prepared for his campaign finance report, which would also lead to believe he'd be ill-prepared to be governor. But again, he's got a lot of good followers. I appreciate them for stepping up and helping any campaign. And I hope in the end they support me so we can remove Governor DeWine.
Hey, thanks, Jim. I really appreciate it, sir.
Thank you.
Trucking businessman Mike Collins was running for Congress to replace Jody Heiss. This is for the Georgia 10 House seat. Vernon Jones was running for governor to unseat Georgia Governor Brian Kemp in the Republican primary. President Donald J. Trump convinced former Senator David Perdue to also run in the primary against Kemp, and he convinced Jones to drop out. Thus, Trump endorsed Perdue for governor and Jones for Congress. Running in Georgia 10, the seat Collins was already running for. I did not ask Mike Collins about Jones or Trump. I figured he has enough problems, but I did want to know what made him tick. And here's my conversation with Mike Collins.
Share with me that moment, where you were, what you were thinking when you decided to commit to running in Georgia 10.
Well, you know, we had been looking at this thing for quite some while, you know, and trying to decide on what our role was. My wife and I had actually talked about, you know, doing a lot of fundraising and helping people. And at the same time, I had the opportunity to go to Ohio and speak out against Anthony Gonzalez up there, old Rhino that had voted to impeach our president. And while I was up there, there was a question and answer session, and those people, they kept asking what to do, what do we need to do, and I kept telling them to get involved and run for things, get involved and run for you. School board and your local city council elections, and you know, there I was, people asking me to run, me saying I'm gonna do something different, me asking them to run. So you know, on that flight home that night, I thought, man, you know, I've been asking these people to get involved, and that's what I need to do. And you know, it's obvious too that President Trump paved the way, you know, for what we feel is just average business people that aren't involved in politics to put their business to the side and go and serve. And that fits us to a T. I believe in that America First agenda. You know, Neil, I was early on a Trump supporter. Way before he was even a nominee, when he came to Atlanta. And, you know, and I signed up and believe in that agenda enough to where I maxed out to the guy twice. So I know that is what is good for this country. I've been in business the 4 years that Trump was here. I've been in business over 30 years. So I've been through a number of administrations. And my gosh, we were humming like a sewing machine during Trump's administration.
I noticed I was at a rally in Ohio, and as I was this is in the 2016 campaign, and I noticed that a lot of there were like 100 pickup trucks in the parking lot, right? But these weren't like regular pickup trucks. These were like Ford 250 Super Dudes, right? These were like King cabs. And it's like what I was thinking about is the men who drive these trucks own their own business. They're very successful. They might have 50 or 100 people working for them, but they still have to go to work every day. They still have to show up on Monday morning. And it's like these guys are all with Trump. And there's something about Trump that is – and these are very serious men. And then Trump has connected with them. And it really made me think that that Trump was going to take it, because if he was to win over these guys – who are really the heart and soul of the economy, then he was on to something.
And he was, you're right. You know, it was that, it was everything from securing our borders where people are just pouring in illegally to getting these regulations off of our backs, to getting the taxes lowered, that's how you get this economy going. And it was also just the fact that this guy gets out there and meals among the people, just average blue-collar people. You know, like they said, just the forgotten men and women of America that are out there working their butts off every day. They just want to get up, go to work, provide for their family, go to church on Sunday, and they just want to be left alone. And you know, for decades, we have just let the federal government creep into our lives, slowly, little by little. And you know, if we don't stop this now, and he understood that, we're going to wake up one day, and you're not going to realize just how much power the federal government has over you. You know, you take, for instance, Neil, you take a look at what happened to those truckers in Canada. Now, I know Canada is a little bit different from us as far as we have our Bill of Rights and they have a Charter of Rights. But you look at what they did to them. Took their license, their insurance, their vehicles, you know, just pretty much just crushed them and put them out of business. And then you flip over to the United States and you take that Build Back Broke plan that Biden wanted to put through. Do you remember there was a provision in there where banks had to report anything over $600 that you may
crazy.
Put in or take out of yes.
That's out and out surveillance.
You're exactly right. And it's a way to control the American people. And that's huge. And people are really understanding and waking up to the fact that we have got to grab our freedoms back. And we have got to get back to an America first agenda.
Last question. Is Georgia still Trump country?
I'm going to tell you something. The state of Georgia is red-blooded Trump country, period. That election was stolen. I was working those polls. I saw that coming in, and I understand we need to audit that election. I tell you what, we need to audit every election every cycle. There's nothing wrong with that. But the American people need to understand what happened in that last election cycle. Hey, man, I appreciate it. You had a good time, and I'm just getting off.
How about that?
to go in here. Yeah.
All right, thanks, man. All right,
buddy.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on the Ohio Star podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our weekly programs that drop Thursdays. And also, please remember to leave a positive review on iTunes or wherever you are hearing me now, because it helps other people find the podcast. I am Reporter McCabe on Twitter, and you can send me news tips at neilwmccabe@thestarnewsnetwork.com. Until next time, this is Neil W. McCabe reporting for the Ohio Star.